Throughout the ages, history has been altered by word of mouth and the misrepresentation of those who might not have been present when some of the world's most significant events took place. Channelers Barry and Connie Strom bring through the spirits of those who actually witnessed or took part in these historical events and lets them tell their stories in their own words. Welcome to Channeling History. And now, here are your hosts, Barry and Connie Strom.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Channeling History. We're the only show where we speak to the souls that made things happen. I'm Barry Strom, your host, and I'll be doing the channeling of the spirits tonight.
And I'm Connie Strom, your co-host. Last week, we channeled four different mysterious murders, that of Natalie Wood, Bruce Lee, Marilyn Monroe, and David Carradine. If you missed the show, it's available on our YouTube channel or on Podomatic.com. We learned a lot about what really happened, and if you're into conspiracies and mysteries, I suggest you check it out. Tonight, we will be speaking with three of the most famous newscasters from the days when you could believe what you heard on the news. We'll be speaking with Walter Cronkite, Edward R. Murrow, and David Brinkley. Barry and I are looking forward to their answers to our questions. We won't be taking a break tonight, so we can spend as much time as possible channeling these wonderful people. I would be asking the questions of the spirits, and Barry will be answering in their words. All of our shows are available on our YouTube channel in Barry's name, or if you'd like to download them, go to Podomatic.com and just search Channeling History. And as always, I ask you to please tell your friends about us so we can continue to grow our audience.
Okay, now we always give a small disclaimer because we have no idea what our spirit guests are going to say. So the opinions or statements voiced on our show are the channeled words of the spirits and do not necessarily reflect our opinions, those of the Parix Network, of our sponsors. If you listen to our show, you also know that we always say a prayer of protection. Connie's now going to say the prayer and we'll begin to channel with our three great spirit guests tonight.
God, please grant us your wisdom and protection. Grant us the knowledge that we can handle and keep us safe from all things that will harm us. Keep the messages positive and pure love. Keep us safe from our egos. We ask these things in the light of the seen, the unseen, and the honesty of God.
Okay, Connie, we have a really, really good show tonight. And I'm interested, as you said, to hear the answers myself. So we're going to start with Walter Cronkite. Walter was an anchorman for the CBS Evening News for 19 years, from 1962 to 1981. Was often cited as the most trusted man in America. I wish I knew who that was now. So anyway, tonight, let's welcome him to our show.
Thank you so much for joining us this evening, Walter. You left college in your junior year during the fall term of 1935 to become a radio announcer. What was it like to be on the radio in those early days?
Well, it was very different. Today, as you know, everything is pretty well organized. It was a pioneer medium. We couldn't speak across the ocean. You have amazing things that you're doing today. Just look, the two of you are in the basement of your home, and your show's being heard around the world. And we couldn't do that. In the early days of radio, you would have an announcer, and basically the only thing that counted for a person was what their voice sounded like. You'd have somebody who would write a script, you'd have producers, but it was just so very, very different from what you have today.
You were offered a chance to join the news team of Edward R. Murrow, but you declined. How'd that affect your relationship with Mr. Murrow?
He offered me a great opportunity. I wanted to do it, but the people that I was working for offered me more money. In those days, we weren't talking about a lot of money. I mean, a dollar an hour was a big deal. My employers kept offering me more money. Edward could not keep up with what they were offering. So I simply made an economic decision. It did upset him greatly. I think he understood that I would be a great member of his team. For a couple of years, I must say we didn't get along real well, but the time came, we became excellent friends.
Good to hear. You became one of the top American reporters during World War II and even got to fly in a B-17 Flying Fortress on a bombing raid over Germany. What was that like?
Terrifying. You cannot imagine what our boys went through flying those raids. They had what we now look at as very archaic flying systems. They had to rely on their machine guns to protect them. The Luftwaffe, they were always present, especially once we started to fly into Germany. Our fighter planes in the beginning couldn't stay with the fortresses for the entire flight. The bombing runs themselves would have to be conducted without fighter protection. It's incredible. The boys showed unbelievable courage. Many, many of them failed to come back. I know on the raid that I was on, we actually were intercepted by fighters. I must admit it was terrifying. And these poor kids did this day after day, basically until many of them were killed.
So they were special for sure. Did you think that the Army censored your work?
To a certain degree they did, but they had to. In those days, you had to be very careful what you spoke about. You had to be very careful with the pictures and the photographs. Keep in mind that during World War II, a lot of what we were doing was trying to fool the Germans. So the Army would give us criteria that we had to follow. They didn't want us to speak about where our divisions were, what we were planning, obviously. So yes, to a certain extent, the Army did offer censorship upon my work.
Mm-hmm. In 1950, you were recruited by Murrow and joined the CBS News organization on television. What was it like in the early days of television?
About as disorganized as the early days of radio. In the 1950s, television was very new. It was black and white. People were working on color television. But it was very different. Today, you have these elaborate studios. You have multiple cameras. You have very high tech. You've got computer simulation. We had none of that. Our stuff was very basic. It was not uncommon that there would be but a single camera. When I would do the news, it wasn't that we'd get different camera angles. We had a lot more power to speak of what we wanted to. I had the ability to write many of my own scripts and to do my own reporting. So it was actually a wonderful time. We enjoyed what we did. There were not a lot of competitors. It was basically NBC, CBS, ABC came along. It was a time of basic truths. We knew the importance. We were in the middle of the Cold War. We had to tell the people the truth. We couldn't create fear for them. We couldn't lie to them. We had to do our best.
So there wasn't a lot of censorship in those days?
The sponsors had control. Some of the sponsors wanted us to do certain things. The morality was much different then, as you know. So there were guidelines. The management sometimes told us to go easy on a story, but they never said that we could not cover a story.
Did you believe a news anchor should give an opinion or commentary in those days?
Absolutely. Newspapermen should have the ability. They have information that you don't have as a listener. But I strongly believe this. If they are giving their own opinion, they should tell the public. They should not give their opinions and pretend that it is the news. When you give your opinion or commentary, that's what it is. It's an opinion. You have a responsibility to make sure that the listening public understands that. Today, many of the opinions are covered just like news, like it's the real thing. It's a very dangerous, dangerous practice. We were always very, very careful in my day.
So do you think any of today's news anchors adhere to keeping standards of objective journalism?
I think there are some that try, especially the war reporters. Today you're seeing some great news stories coming out of Europe, sadly because of the war. Many of those stories are quite accurate and true. And they're trying to bring you the terrible destruction that's taking place. Many of the main news channels have now become basically political organizations. It's a very, very different time. I think today there are people that try to be honest journalists, but even they find it very, very difficult to cover not to speak their own opinions.
One of your greatest moments was reporting of the assassination of President Kennedy. Will you please tell us about that day?
It was one of the worst days of my life. The news came in that Kennedy had been killed. I was simply working, preparing my scripts for the day. When I tried to go online to bring the people the story, that we didn't even have a TV camera available. They were working on it. I felt very strongly about President Kennedy. I thought he was a good man. I thought that he was trying to do something for the country. When the news came that he had been killed, I could hardly speak. I had tears running down my face. I managed to gain control, and I managed to tell the people the best I could what was taking place. It was truly one of the worst days of my life.
Yes, we've talked with the president, and he is a wonderful soul. You were at the height of your career during the Vietnam War. What was your opinion about the war?
I tried to bring the people the story of the war. I knew it was very, very difficult. I knew in my heart there was no way really that we could win a war like this. Our boys were being killed. The large military businesses were pretty much in control of what was taking place. I did believe that perhaps one of the reasons that President Kennedy had been assassinated was because he was trying to extract the United States from the war. In my heart, I was very much against it, but I did try to bring an honest opinion to the people.
You were correct about the reason for him to being assassinated. What was your opinion about Lyndon Johnson?
I felt very uneasy about him. I knew of his past. I knew that he had mob affiliations. I knew that he was crude and rude. There were many things about Lyndon that I did not appreciate. And I had to maintain a relationship with him so that we would be allowed to participate in the news that he was offering from the White House. When I arrived over here, I found out that he was really a lot worse than what I ever considered.
Do you feel that you played a role in the resignation of President Nixon after the Watergate affair?
I was very critical of President Nixon. I felt that he had made many mistakes. I felt that he wasn't an honest person. I must admit that perhaps I was a little bit biased against him. But when Watergate broke, I made sure that I covered as many details of it as possible.
Okay, what is your opinion of the modern news coverage?
I think that in many instances, modern news coverage leaves a lot to be desired. It's very competitive. Where we only had several organizations that were competing, there's now a huge amount of competition to bring people the news. Not only do you have television, but you now have social media. There are many organizations bringing you news on social media, and many people are not listening to network news. Several of the organizations now are much more political than we ever considered. You have people out there that, well, there's no other way to put it, but have no problem telling you any lie that they wish to tell you in order to get their opinions across. It's very difficult at this time to understand what is taking place in the media. Hopefully, they will resolve to resort back to basic newscasting, but I suspect that that's not going to happen.
Walter, do you think the First Amendment will survive?
Oh, you're seeing a lot of attacks on the First Amendment. Founding fathers wanted to give us freedom of speech. The newspapers were supposed to keep the politicians honest. Today, you have so many politicians that are dishonest that many of the newspaper reporters have sold out to them. Many of the reporters today just simply want to be part of the end team, and they'll print anything to do that. The First Amendment is not going to survive in the condition that the Founding Fathers anticipated.
What role do you see social media playing in the news industry in the future?
It's possible that social media will basically take over for news reporting. Sadly, there will be no controls on what people hear on social media. That is a difficult thing that has to be resolved. But the internet gives many, many people the opportunity. It gives individuals the ability to bring you their opinions. Sadly, there is no way to know what the truth is anymore. It is so distorted.
How would you be reporting what's taking place with our current Justice Department?
I would be reporting that the Justice Department at the top has become a political tool. If you take time to study what is taking place, you'll understand that the Justice Department is doing things that do not assure equal justice for all. I think that the Justice Department needs to be reorganized. You're seeing prosecutors doing things that they should never be doing. They're bringing people to trial that should never be brought to trial. So the Justice Department has problems, and it's up to Congress to straighten it out.
Yeah. When does news become propaganda? And have we reached that point in the United States today?
There are certainly news organizations that could be classified as propaganda. Now, it's not as bad as over in the Soviet Union, where they only hear one line and it's a bunch of lies. But you are being lied to. In many instances, the so-called news is not the news. It's false. You just saw that the New York Times was rewarded a Nobel Prize for a story that was a total lie. Until truth comes back in, it's going to be a very difficult time for America.
Walter, it's been so great hearing from you. Did you have a closing message for us?
I would like to say that without a strong news organizations, it will be a very, very difficult time for the country. It is only the news, the people that investigate, the investigative reporters, the individuals that speak the truth. They're the ones that are very critical to the evolution forward. If you do not have strong news organizations, then you will not be able to have any ability to detect the truth, the lies, or even what is going on around you. It is only the newspaper organizations that can protect the people of the country. The people can try. They can do many things. They have to elect quality individuals. But what it comes down to is that it is only through honest broadcasting of the news and information that the United States can progress. So thank you for allowing me to come through.
You're quite welcome. We really appreciate it.
Okay, next we're going to speak with Edward R. Murrow. He joined CBS in 1935 and stayed with them for his entire career. He was a pioneer in radio and television and provided the world with news you can trust. Mr. Murrow, thank you for coming through for us tonight. Connie, I know you have some questions.
Welcome, Edward. You graduated from college in 1930 and immediately became involved in the news media. Would you tell us what it was like in those early years of radio?
It was a lot of fun, disorganized. It was a time where we spoke the truth. It was a time that you could speak the truth and not be penalized for it. Today you see people try to speak the truth and they're attacked on social media. We had to build an audience. It was done through independent stations. It was done through commercials, done through sponsors. It was done at a time where many different things were acceptable. It was a time of innovation. It was simply a wonderful time.
In the early days, NBC and CBS were the major competitors in the news industry. What was the competition like between those two back in those early days?
I can't say it was overly friendly. It was real competition. We were all striving to build markets. We were attempting to do many, many things. But it was an honest competition. If you look at the individuals, the newscasters that were on the different stations and the different networks, they were honest people. It was a time when World War II was tearing the world apart. We did our best to bring you the information we could from World War II. After World War II, we had the Cold War. We had to be very, very careful in what we did. We had to make sure that we were honest. Today, there are very few checks and balances, but it was very, very competitive. We were all pioneers. Television was new, black and white. The evening news did not even exist in the beginning. We had to convince people that they wanted to listen to the news, and to do that, we had to be honest.
You were initially in management for NBC and not on the air. Why did that change?
It seemed like I wanted to take a more active role. I was in Europe. I was doing many things. I was organizing. It was the beginning of World War II. The Nazis were taking over Europe. We had to be basically based in England. Nothing was safe anymore over there. I had taken some courses in college, and I realized that I wanted to participate in speaking to the public.
Okay. During the early part of World War II, you were in London reporting on the Blitz. These were shortwave broadcasts. What was that like?
Incredibly inconsistent. Today, the internet opens the world for you. In those days, we had to rely on some very, very basic equipment. The shortwave radio was very primitive. The quality was poor. You'd crackle in the background. Sometimes it wouldn't work. You never really knew how many people could tune in to you. But it was the prime techniques of the time.
You were the first reporter at the Buchenwald, it's the concentration camp in Germany. What would you tell our listeners about that experience?
I cannot tell you the horrors. I cannot tell you what I saw. It was unbelievable. When you see bodies stacked upon bodies, when you see humans that have been starved where they're just skin and bones, when you speak to the people and they tell you the brutalities had taken place. Anyone that tells you that the Holocaust did not exist is nothing but a damn liar. I can tell you I saw it. I can tell you it was so bad that I could not even speak about some of the things that I saw. I can tell you that it was one of the worst examples of man's inhumanity to man of which you can ever imagine. I can only tell you that I hope that nothing like that ever takes place in the future. I know that God was very, very, very sad when he watched all this. Today, the Germans are a wonderful country. They've recovered. They've gotten rid of the madness that created the Holocaust. It is something that still haunts me even on this side. The horror of those days that I was at Buchenwald is indescribable.
You did a special on UFOs in 1950. Did you have any experiences with UFOs? And what do you think is happening today?
In those days, we traveled a lot by air. I had seen vehicles over the ocean that I could not explain. The Army would not let us speak of UFOs. Many feared that what I was seeing, these special vehicles, were simply Russian inventions, Russian weapons, Russian technologies. I thought that I would do a special. Roswell had many stories about it. I thought, in my mind, that UFOs had to exist, that there had to be life on other planets. That it was impossible to look into the sky and to see all these stars and to assume that we were the only life. So I did try to do some pioneer reporting on UFOs. Now today, you're facing disclosure, the realities of alien presence is becoming a reality. Today, social media is so strong that they cannot stop disclosure. When anybody throughout the world can take a picture, put it on the internet, the days of secrecy on that subject are pretty much over. So today, what is taking place is the beginning of alien disclosure.
It's what we've been told is going to happen. You were one of the most outspoken opponents of McCarthyism. Do you see any parallels with McCarthyism and what is taking place today?
Yes, I do. Today, you are seeing people accused of many things for no reason. Today, you're seeing social movements, and you're seeing an internet that allows thousands and thousands of people to comment when they think that they are being abused in some manner. McCarthy attacked at people that he believed had a chance to be communists. Most of them weren't. He was a very abusive individual. He's a nasty individual. Today you see people accused of having opinions that simply vary from what groups of people have. People are attacked for having opinions. I consider that very similar to what McCarthyism was in my day.
Agreed. What is your opinion of modern news coverage?
There are some very good reporters. There are some young individuals that are trying to do their best. There are individuals that are reporting on the violence and the war in Europe that are doing a very good job. Many of the news agencies today are owned by extremely powerful and rich people that have political goals. They are forcing their newsmen to follow those opinions. It is very difficult to sort out news organizations that do not have a political agenda. That goes for the Republican Party, it goes for the Democratic Party, independents, communists. All of these influences today are part of your news organizations.
Do you think the First Amendment will survive?
It is definitely not going to survive in its original format. It will survive, but your rights will be certainly infringed upon.
How would you be reporting about what is taking place with our current Justice Department?
I would try to take a realistic look at what really is taking place. I would find that in many instances, justice is being altered to fit political expectations. You're seeing big cities where people are being released after committing crimes. You're seeing terrible crime surges, murders. You're seeing drugs being brought into the country. The question in my mind would be, why does the Justice Department, as powerful as it is, not stop the flow of drugs that the cartels are bringing in? There's got to be something wrong, and I would be trying to write about it.
What do you think for the future of news reporting?
I think we're going to see it change drastically in the near future. I think that the internet, with its availability of information, is going to have huge changes. I believe that the internet is going to allow people to find the truth. As the one saying was, the truth is out there. People are going to have to do a lot of their own research. They're going to have to try to figure out just exactly what is right and what is wrong. But I'm very positive about the internet and social media as a source of news information in the future.
Okay. When does news become propaganda? And have we reached that point in the United States today?
In many instances, you have truly reached a point where news is propaganda. As my friend pointed out, when the New York Times received a Nobel Prize for a totally fake story, that's propaganda. The trappings of truth are disguised in so many ways. It is a very, very difficult time, and I think that the news industry has to reorganize.
Edward, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. Do you have a final closing message for us?
Yes, I would like to thank you for allowing me to come through tonight. What could be better for a newsman that hasn't been able to speak for so many years than to have his voice heard once more, even though it is not my true voice, but they are my words? I think that it is the responsibility of the news industry to be the watchdogs over the political organizations that are controlling your country. If the news organizations do not fulfill their primary function, and that primary function, according to the Constitution of the United States, is to provide free access to information and truth. It is only through news organizations that I believe people can have the full knowledge that they need to make political decisions. Political decisions today are dominated by individuals of great wealth. When you have political positions that pay $200,000 a year at most, but people spend hundreds of millions of dollars to obtain, there has to be a reason. And sadly, that reason is often political corruption. An individual today is judged by how many favors they can do. It seems as though all of the politicians have lost contact with reality when it comes to spending. Today, you cannot find compromise with your politicians. Newspaper reporters will back one side or the other. Newspaper reporting should be forcing them to compromise for what's best of the country. I think that the people doing the news today must reconsider that they have to think about what is best truly for the country. There's a saying that the truth will set you free. If you don't tell the truth, then the opposite will occur, and you will lose your rights. You will lose your freedoms. You will lose your abilities to choose a religion of your choice. Newspapers are perhaps the thing of the past. Modern technologies may replace them, but it is up to the reporters to bring you the news any way they can. So thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak again. Should I be asked, I would obviously come back. So thank you.
We will keep that in mind. David Brinkley was a newscaster for NBC and ABC in a career lasting from 1943 to 1997. His first success was the Huntley-Brinkley Report on NBC, where he teamed up with Chet Huntley. During the early 1960s, it was America's most popular newscast. Thank you, David, for joining us this evening. In the 1940s, you were a White House correspondent for NBC News. What is your opinion of the current White House correspondents and the reporting on the president today?
Much has changed with the White House correspondents. In my day, you would have regular times. The president would be accessible. It was not the news. He had a press secretary, but the secretary was not expected to carry all of the burden of speaking to the press. During the war, the president wanted to be on the news. He wanted to tell the people to have faith that everything would be well. Today, our current president is not treating the press in the open manner that I would love to see. It is apparent that many of the newspaper people that are present in the White House get preferential treatment. It is very difficult to get answers to difficult questions. I wish that the current president would reassess the information, the availability of the information that they make to the press. I wish that in many ways the atmosphere that we had in the White House would return? I do not think that what is taking place today is good for the American people.
Tell us about your partnership with Chet Huntley, which began with NBC on television.
NBC wanted to experiment. They were not doing that well in the news division. And it was suggested that a partnership. In the beginning, the organization did not feel that I was capable of it. They did not feel that Chet was capable of it. But the decision was made to give us a try. And from our very first show, our listenership increased. Chet is a wonderful soul. He is honest. He truly cared about the country. He wanted to bring the best news possible to the listening public. He believed that the two of us could build on each other's strengths. And that is pretty much what took place. Chet and I were on the news for many, many years. He was and he is a true friend. And we still spend a lot of time over here together.
Yes, Barry and I watched you religiously. In 1996, just before your retirement, you spoke some words that were not exactly complimentary of Bill Clinton. As you watch from the other side, what is your opinion of the Clintons?
You are correct. I was caught on a hot mic. I thought the microphone was turned off. And I made some relatively derogatory comments about Bill Clinton. I felt that he was an incredibly intelligent person. I felt that he had potential. But I felt that there would be many problems for him. I was correct. There were many problems for him. Today, the Clintons are a political powerhouse. They have much say. They have much ability to influence decisions. There are times that they do good, but there are many times that they do not so good.
What is your opinion of modern news coverage?
When I look at modern news coverage, it saddens me. Chet and I tried to be very direct. We tried to bring you the truth. We tried to bring you the news as it was happening. If we wanted to do a commentary, we would tell you. We did not try to disguise the words we were speaking. Today, you see many of the news channels that are controlled by people with very strong political agendas. They've invested in the businesses, and they influence those businesses. They try to obtain business goals through their news reporting. They try to certainly influence elections. In many instances, I think they actually try to split the American people because they understand that if the American people are split, they will be weakened. If you have two warring parties, negotiation does not have a high probability. If news reporting can split the people of this country, then it is highly unlikely that their politicians will compromise as well.
Do you think the First Amendment will survive?
Not in the condition that it was for the Founding Fathers, as my friends have said. Today, the First Amendment is being attacked. People do not want to hear opposing opinions. The whole purpose of the First Amendment was to guarantee that you heard opposing opinions. If you take away the right of opposition to declare their words, then the words that you will hear will become lies. The lies will become propaganda. The people will be misled. And basically, that will be the end of the constitutional country that we refer to as the United States.
How would you be reporting what's taking place with our current Justice Department?
I would be behaving much the same as my friends. The Justice Department was always considered a truly neutral agency. Politics were not supposed to be part of the determinations made by through the Justice Department. Today, you're seeing certain areas of the country that are highly politicized. Large cities are mainly neutral. The country, rural areas are generally conservative. These areas, quite often, the people in charge for the Justice Department will pursue the ideals of those people instead of maintaining a true neutrality. It's Congress's responsibility to maintain neutrality in the Justice Department. I think for the past several years, that neutrality has bowed to political whims. So I would be reporting about the weaknesses. I would also give them credit for what they do that is right. But I do think it is time for the newspapers of our country to assure that Lady Justice truly has a blindfold.
Yes. What do you think of the future for news reporting?
I think that the future for news reporting is going to be very dependent on social media. We are seeing that as news agencies become more politically oriented, their listenership eventually diminishes, and what remains are only those that are truly radical in their beliefs. They can be liberal, they can be conservative. But I think that the majority of individuals in this country have a more middle-of-the-road opinion of things. They want to see our politicians get along, and they want to hear the truth from the media. It is my belief that when a news media company truly brings people the truth, that are honest with the people, and the people understand that they are receiving the truth, they would receive overwhelming support. The answer is not for a news agency to be conservative or liberal. The answer for them is to speak the truth.
Yes. Do you think there's a chance that social media will take over for the news reporting?
I believe that there's a very good chance that it will. I think that political biased news agencies will self-destruct. As we watch from over here, we are seeing more and more people resorting to trying to find the truth on social media. Admittedly, there are no controls to the information that they're receiving, but they are trying to find the truth. As more and more people become disgusted with politically oriented news organizations. I think that they will turn to social media. You see, social media is also in its infant days, just as TV used to be in its infant days. I think that you will see an evolution in social media that will replace much of what is your current means of finding news. And hopefully that change will bring truth.
Did you believe that a news anchor should give an opinion or a commentary?
Absolutely. They have max access to the information that most people do not have. But if you're going to give people your personal opinion, you have to let them know that you are speaking an opinion or a commentary. Today, there's no such mention of that. They come on, give a personal opinion, and people mistake it for the real news. It is not true reporting, in my idea.
Who do you consider the worst examples of biased news reporting?
I actually think you have more biased news reporting than you have honest reporting at this time. Every news channel has biased reporting. I would be very hesitant to be able to choose one. It's more like an epidemic.
I think you're correct on that. What do you consider the best examples of non-biased news reporting?
I think that there's some very good information sources on the internet. You have to search them out and you have to research them. As we watch from over here, we're seeing some very good reporting coming out of the Ukraine on the war. Much of it is biased. Much of it is coming from people that want Russia to lose or Russia to win. But there are prime examples of honest reporting coming forth. I think that'll set an example. I think you will have people flocking to those sources. And as people listen to those sources, others will understand that perhaps they're not doing what they should be doing.
David, what advice would you give to anyone desiring to enter the news broadcasting profession today?
I would tell them it is an incredibly difficult profession. Today, very wealthy people control most of the major news sources. There are individuals that want to bring the truth. But most of these individuals have got political motives, and the people that work for them are forced to tailor their stories to match those political motives. I would tell individuals that they would be better off working for secondary news sources that speak the truth. I think that you'll see a tsunami of individuals turning to the organizations that speak the truth. If those young individuals can build a foundation working for that type of an organization, I think there will be a time in the future where they can once again prosper.
Okay, you've been talking about people don't know who or what to trust in the news media. Is there a good way to sort out the truth?
It's very difficult. Today, people have become astonishing liars. They are able to hide the truth. If the people speak a lie often enough, it is often accepted simply as the truth. You've all seen examples of that for the past 4 or 5 years. The news agencies have spoken the same lie. Russia does it today. They speak the same lie and it becomes the truth. The people of Russia have no idea what the facts are anymore because they've heard lies for so long. It is just simply a very difficult time.
Yeah. David, do you think there's any hope for democracies in the world today?
There's always hope, Connie. We all lived at a time of the Cold War, World War II. The threats were very real and active to the democracies. Sometimes we were censored for the safety of our armies, of our nation. But the truth always prevails. If news agencies speak those truths, and even more importantly, if the people of those democracies understand the truth and want to protect their liberties. You see, many people don't care to protect their liberties. They throw themselves upon the government to take care of them. They don't really have ambitions. They accept what is taking place around them. We watched over here as you talked to George Orwell, as he spoke of his book 1984, and how much of that is taking place. It is our hope that the citizens will take an active role and will do what is necessary for the democracies to survive.
David, thank you so much. It's been just wonderful hearing from the three of you. Do you have a closing message for us?
Yes. As with my friends, I want to thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm sorry Chet was not here with me. He would have liked to have gotten a few words. He always did. I think it is very important that people providing the news provide the truth. It is not the role of a true reporter to tailor the news to what they believe. Truth. Truth will set you free. Truth is what is required, as I said a little earlier, for the democracies to make it and prosper. Today you see very little truth in the news. That's a sad fact. I wish that it was not, but it is. So, listen to those that tell the truth. Understand the truth. Know history. Understand what has taken place in the past. Because if you ignore it, it will take place in the future. So, thank you very much for allowing me to come through. I appreciate the opportunity.
And we really appreciate you all coming to join us. You all had wonderful things to say. Wisdom to be shared by all.
Okay, guys, next week we're going to investigate four famous conspiracies. The Roswell alien incident, what happens in the Bermuda Triangle, manipulation of the weather, and the moon landing. Should be quite interesting. Tell your friends. You can submit questions or suggestions for future guests on our email, channelinghistoryonparax@gmail.com. My eighth book, Messages of God for a Modern World, is now available on Amazon, softcover, ebook, English, Spanish. Consists of 60 channeled messages from our Wednesday podcast, a weekly message from Jesus. It is an absolutely wonderful devotional. I sincerely hope that you will take time to buy it and to understand it.
And I would like to thank you all for tuning in this evening. God bless all of you. Have a wonderful week.
Indeed. I hope you enjoyed the show tonight. I know I did. Those are incredible individuals. Great strength, great everything you would ever want. Hopefully, the news will change. So thank you for listening. Please join us on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Para-X Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to Channeling History. Tune in again next week for another electrifying episode, as we never know who will make an appearance or who will come through the portal. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2020. Our story begins by Kevin MacLeod, licensed through Incompetech.com.